Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, movie truthers. Welcome to this week's episode of Truth and Movies. I'm Michael Leader.
I'm Adam Woodward.
And I'm Lou Thomas.
And on today's show, Ryan Reynolds is an NPC who becomes the MVP in Free Guy. There's power, corruption and lies in Michelle Franco's New Order. And in Film Club, we're going back to Ryan Reynolds' college days in Van Wilder Party Liaison. All coming up on Truth and Movies, a Little White Lies podcast. Yes, welcome back, listeners. Welcome back, Adam. Welcome back, Lou. Lou, I must ask the question, have you ever been referred to as a party liaison?
Party animal, party warrior, party lunatic, but never quite a party liaison.
Mm-hmm. How have you been, man?
I'm very good, actually. I've just remembered something, like, years ago, for some reason, because I was always quite good at, maybe not party liaison, but introducing people and bringing people together. A friend of mine once described me as like the Jay-Z of South London. I mean, I'm not sure I ever had any like world-beating collaborations like him, but you know, I like to try.
Fantastic. We're happy for you to be the Ryan Reynolds of the Little White Lies family, I'm sure. Adam, how have you been? Any good highlights in the last few weeks of cinema going for you?
Yeah, no, not too bad, thanks. I have seen a few things which I can't really talk about. One of them being the next Little White Lies cover film, mm-hmm. which is sort of coming out at the end of this year, which I'm very, very excited about. Mm-hmm. And yeah, no, not too much to report, really. We're about to go to print on the next issue, which, yeah, by the time this goes out, we'll have kind of started that process and hit that big button. But yeah, no, otherwise all good.
Do you have a shelf date for that next issue or when we should expect it?
I should know that, and it keeps changing. It's going to be sort of like third week of August, so yeah, kind of end of next week going into the following week.
Very exciting, can't wait to hear more. But first, we have this week's new releases to tackle, and up first, it's Free Guy. So let's start with the official line on Free Guy. Ryan Reynolds plays a humble bank teller who discovers he is actually a background character in an open world video game and decides to become the hero of his own story, one he rewrites himself. Now in a world where there are no limits, he is determined to be the guy who saves his world his way before it is too late. So Lou, that was the line about Free Guy, and the trailer seemed like it was all within the video game world, but actually in reality it's a sort of inside outside video game sort of film, right?
Right. So this is it. You're obviously sold it as being, yeah, part of a game, blah blah blah. But as fairly early on we get into the thing where it's like a Ready Player One thing. I mean, let's face it, that's the most obvious recent touchstone when we're talking about films that have really incorporated gaming in a serious fashion. And obviously, it's Spielberg with Ready Player One, and, you know, he's brilliant and blah, blah, blah. But this does it in a slightly different way. Ryan Reynolds is introduced to the fact that he's actually in the game by some sunglasses, which he picks up off another character. And any big fans of kind of John Carpenter and certainly satirical 80s films will immediately think, oh, that is a reference to They Live. For those of you who've seen it, which is hopefully a lot of you, They Live is this brilliant 80s satire where you put on these sunglasses and suddenly you see the world as it really is. So that I felt that was quite a nice nod. But anyway, sort of getting off my tangent for a second. When you're watching Free Guy, I really like the fact that it does go on this kind of Truman Show discovery, that this man realises that actually his whole life has been a lie. That for me was really good. It doesn't quite push the satire in any really serious. It's all done for laughs, and he does have these moments of introspection, and that's kind of nice. But really, it's about the full on entertainment of him navigating this crazy world, and then he gets involved with Jodie Comer, and Jodie Comer is, you know, the kind of token love interest. She's this really cool, sexy character in the game called, I think, Molotov Girl. And I think her name's Millie, is her name of her as the real-life player. And she's great in both roles, as you'd expect. Ryan Reynolds, what he does his kind of regular thing, but he actually plays it quite straight. He's NPC, non-playing character, is very straight-laced and very clean-cut and so on. I mean, I think personally Ryan Reynolds is better when he's going a little bit crazy, maybe not as full-on sort of depraved as Deadpool, but when he's a little bit rough around the edges and a bit of stubble and whatever, you know, he feels like he can get a bit naughtier. My thing with this film is, it is very much, you know, Truman Show plus Ready Player One plus The Matrix. And since we watched it the other week, I've been thinking, is it actually any more than this? Does it have any more substance? And the truth is, it is entertaining. And what I really like about it, aside from the sort of big CGI action scenes and all that stuff, the him and his mate in it, him and his buddy, and this is what's kind of interesting, his buddy is called Buddy and he's called Guy. So is that, I mean, that's been mentioned in other reviews, but like, is that kind of ironic? You know, a bit like in Repo Man, where everybody's named after a beer, like Bud or Light or whatever. You feel like calling the characters Buddy and Guy is a kind of little joke the filmmakers are making, you know, to us and with themselves, you know. I was entertained and I did really enjoy it and I did think it was good fun. But has it got any real substance? No, not really. But let's face it, we don't get to see many big blockbuster films that have an original idea. We know that it's mostly these days for big films, it's franchises, sequels, Marvel and DC and so forth. And that's great, that there's definitely a place for that. But at least with Free Guy, I was like, oh, hold on, you've obviously taken some ideas from The Truman Show, and you've obviously taken some ideas from The Matrix, and you've obviously taken some ideas from Ready Player One, but yet it's an original story in the sense that these are original characters and they're going about their business. And for me, I was like, well, that's great. You know, let's do that. Maybe if this film is going to be successful, then maybe there'll be some other big studios going, oh, you know what? Let's take a chance on this original idea.
Well, I'd say there's original IP, which this is, and original ideas, which I don't think this film has many of. Because you mentioned The Matrix and The Truman Show, They Live. These are films that, you know, have some profound, thorny edges to them, insightful edges into who we are and how we operate within the society we're in. Also, Truman Show says something quite profound about our relationship with television. The Matrix, with our relationship with the possibilities or the imaginary space of what the internet could have been circa 1999. I don't really think Free Guy gets its head around games in a similar way.
No, but do you feel like you're maybe expecting a bit too much of it? Because not every film can be not every film can be The Matrix and They Live, Michael. I know what you're getting at, and we all want everything to be amazing all the time. But maybe now is the time, especially in this current dystopian circumstance that we're living in, right? Maybe now is the time to embrace the fact that it's just fun. It hasn't got to change your life.
I love your perspective on the world. Adam, what do you make of Free Guy?
Yeah, it's interesting we're talking about IP, because I guess this is a kind of original concept, albeit kind of cribbing from other things which Lou has mentioned, but there is this being a 20th century production, therefore kind of owned or sort of being released under the sort of Disney umbrella. They do pepper in a few other sort of IP, familiar IP references, and there's a few. I mean, there's a few kind of cameos in this which we won't spoil, but there's a few moments, kind of later on where they sort of explore a bit more like the possibilities of this character realizing, you know, via having these like sunglasses, which essentially. I guess they're kind of like wearing like a cheat code or something. It kind of supercharges your like gaming experience. Mm-hmm. And he sort of realizes the full potential of that. So he suddenly out of nowhere produces like a lightsaber, which is one of those things where, you know, if the bar for you now for blockbusters like this is so low that the mere sight of a lightsaber, which let us be reminded that like that is not a kind of rare treat anymore. I feel like lightsabers are being kind of forced down our throat every few months with like some new Star Wars adjacent kind of product or like launch of something. That is kind of where we're at now, I think, is like you can make a film like this and just like bang in a lightsaber. And the fact that this is from the same writer as Ready Player One, mm-hmm. Which kind of does the same thing, right? It's this sort of like big mashup carnage and there's IP flying all over the place, and it's that thing of kind of rewarding, almost like you get in a video game, it's sort of rewarding viewers with these little sort of breadcrumbs or tokens of, oh, you recognize that thing, we're not really going to do anything with it, we're just going to drop it in and we know you're going to kind of lap it up, and I think that's kind of fine in principle, but I just think it's a shame that the film doesn't really necessarily push that anymore, or do anything more with the kind of video game world and this open world idea, right? It's sort of, I mean, I'm a bit of a lapsed gamer, but my sort of reference or frame reference for this would be something like the GTA games, right? Mm-hmm. Which, you know, as you know, to play, you're constantly kind of pushing at the edges of what is capable within those games, and then subsequent games are developed with that in mind, so they kind of hide in all these Easter eggs and these little things that you can access and unlock. And I think this film doesn't really push that far enough. I'd like to have seen that explored a little bit more. But I think just on a kind of basic narrative level, it's fine. Like the comedy and the sort of buddy relationship between Ryan Reynolds and Lil Ray Howery, who plays the bank cop, is very sweet. Actually, I think it's the kind of superior romance of the multiple romances that are in here.
Totally.
Although it's weird that like the sort of real world plot essentially boils down to like the stakes boil down to there being a kind of lawsuit, which one of the characters is trying to mount against the sort of owner of the game, basically of this game company. Which is sort of then abandoned. I mean, it's like that's literally as high as the stakes get. It's like if you're invested in these like legal proceedings, then that's cool. But yeah, the game I think doesn't really kind of go anywhere. Like the story of the game and him sort of having this awakening and realizing, you know, that the world he is in is a complete lie.
Yeah, and that's quite an interesting point. So the villain of this piece really is Taika Waititi, and he, as we know, is can be quite an interesting director at times, particularly his early stuff. But on screen, he can be quite wild and quite fun in various roles. But in this, he's kind of, I feel for him, he's a little bit dialed down as the villain Antoine, and. I know we've obviously all collectively mentioned that the thing this most has in common with obviously same writer and stuff is Ready Player One. But in Ready Player One, I mean, I know Ben Mendelsohn is off the charts brilliant compared to many other actors. But Ben Mendelsohn in Ready Player One is a good villain and feels like, you know, he's really, you feel like, oh, this guy's evil. Whereas you don't get what Adam has sort of said there, you don't get, and maybe that's part of the limitations of this particular actor, but you don't get this, I don't feel you get the same sense of jeopardy as you do in Ready Player One.
Mm-hmm. I'm finding it really fascinating. I mean, admittedly, Lou, maybe I'm expecting too much of this Ryan Reynolds knockabout comedy film, but I'm very overinvested in the video game industry in general, particularly its cultural ascendancy and reception from, you know, the big wigs in different industries. And I'm finding it very fascinating, this shift, it feels, in the depiction of that world. It feels like, you know, in the way that other industries have their narratives and their tropes and their stereotypes and caricatures, the music industry, there'll always be the slimy record exec played by Rob Lowe in Wayne's World, there'll always be the music producer who, you know, comes in, and there's all this stuff, independent bands selling out to the big labels. In video games, it feels like maybe post Ready Player One, Free Guy, the TV show Mythic Quest as well. It feels like we're settling into a groove now with how on the screen we see the video games, and it is alpha bro nerds like Taika Waititi in this who have sold out to the corporate overlords, who are stepping on the indie kids who have the great ideas, which is what Jodie Comer's character is related to in this, and the pure video game that she created, the independent video game where it was more about creativity and freedom, that he turned into a land of carnage and violence. And the central conflict at the heart of this game of this game and this film is that when Ryan Reynolds' character Guy gets his sentience and gets the sunglasses and can play however he wants, he doesn't kill anyone. And everyone's falling out of their chairs in the world saying, there's a guy playing a video game and he's not blowing stuff up. And, you know, God, that's a very blinkered view of what video games can be, and it's so, you know, limiting. And as a person who's very interested in the breadth of experiences and stories and characters that games can show us, in many ways more broad than mainstream cinema can, that rankled me. And then it goes full Space Jam, as you said, Adam, with the cameos and the references, and that's the thing that is really, really bothering me at the moment. As someone who grew up loving a lot of these franchises, just to see them frittered away as Easter eggs is very, you know, existentially traumatizing.
Wow. But let's... traumatizing, really, man?
Oh, okay, fine. Maybe I'm being hyperbolic just for the listeners. But this is my truth.
All right, I'm with you.
Let's put some scores on Free Guy. Lou, what would you give it?
Gonna go 3 across the board, purely because it's kind of fun. It doesn't really mean anything at the end. I know you want it. I know you want something that's meaningful, and that it's not. It's kind of entertaining. It's fun, and it's got its flaws, but it's not terrible. It's not awful. It's a 3-star film for me across the board.
Adam,
2 in anticipation. I don't really like Ryan Reynolds, and I'm pretty much convinced that no one in Hollywood has ever played a video game, so I didn't really have any expectations. Above that, probably a 2 in enjoyment. I think it's fine in the most part, but just doesn't really have enough about it. It's not kind of interesting or ambitious enough. And actually, that maybe would have been lower had I not been on this podcast fairly recently to talk about another film, Space Jam 2, which is kind of based on the same premise of like an AI achieving sentience. I just feel like it's even now Free Guy feels like quite old hat. And to be honest, my in retrospect score would be probably about 1, just because I think this is not going to be a film which kind of holds up. And it feels dated already somehow. It's strange. Mm-hmm. It's not even, you know, come out, and it does feel kind of feels like the kind of film that Hollywood was making quite a few years ago, and has sort of moved beyond. But you got a kind of crowbar in your IP somewhere, so.
Yeah, I'd give this 2-2, maybe 2-1-1, if I'm being harsh on this film. Maybe 2-2-1, because as you said, Lou and Adam, the central buddy relationship is really strong. And Jodie Comer, I think it's quite a thankless role for her. It's that sort of classic breakout TV star, lands their first big budget film and doesn't really have the character to shine. But seeing Jodie Comer's face on an IMAX screen, she's such an expressive actress.
She's very good. She's very good. I'd love to see her do like a full-on comedy, and her role be a comedic role. I think she'd be really good.
Yeah, she's so magnetic on screen. So, listeners, I think that's trending downwards around the table in terms of our response to Free Guy. But let us know what you think if you do see it. If any gamers out there want to weigh in as well, tell me if I'm way off base. You can do so at the usual channels at LW Lies on Twitter or via email truthandmovies@tcolondon.com. Up next, we're going to Mexico for New Order.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So, New Order. In contemporary Mexico City, a lavish high society wedding is interrupted by violent rioters who take the house by siege. It soon becomes apparent that this seemingly random attack is part of a violent nationwide uprising, as one political system collapses and a more harrowing replacement arises. So, Adam, this film generated a lot of chat back end of last year, premiered at Venice, mm-hmm. won a prize at Venice, but lots of... lots of responses from all over the political map. What do you make of this?
Yeah, so Michel Franco, you know, as you say, won the Grand Jury Prize in Venice, and actually that kind of backs up a pretty solid career he's had kind of making films. I think After Lucia won a prize in Cannes almost a decade ago now. Chronic, which was his last but one film, I think was released here to sort of fairly positive reviews. So he's got a kind of good pedigree, and I think the first thing to say about this, and I saw this for the first time like last week, and kind of missed all of that festival, the fallout from that, which I think is it's always kind of interesting seeing a film then almost in isolation, like after the fact. But I would say it's a very specific perspective. And I think he is obviously referencing and you know, tackling a lot of very kind of real fears. And, you know, if you kind of look at the political climate in places like Mexico, Brazil at the moment, and obviously, I mean, throughout the West, really, I think he's kind of tapping into something that does feel kind of very tangible and very real. I think just on a kind of basic structural level, it didn't really work for me, this film. I think the idea of this lavish sort of bourgeois birthday party being crashed is an interesting setup. I'd like to have seen it maybe be teased out a little bit. Like, it feels like they're in this kind of almost, you know, gated, almost like a sanctuary, right? It's everything's very kind of, if they feel cut off from the real world, there's no sense of the space or the world around them, and then suddenly that comes crashing in. But it happens quite early in the film, and then from there everything just unravels and it becomes more frantic and more crazy, and it feels like he's achieved and pulled off some very impressive like action and sort of set pieces, where you have, you know, essentially scenes which look like they've been pulled from television footage of a riot or some kind of uprising. So you have burnt out cars and police in kind of riot gear, just kind of running around very heavy-handedly. And then you have these insurgents whose cause initially is kind of unclear. And they're sort of, you know, executing people in the street, and the whole thing has just got this, yeah, very chaotic energy. But it kind of felt to me like it didn't really have anywhere to go after that. You know, it sets that up pretty early on, and then you're just kind of watching. And it's we should say as well, it's only 86 minutes, this film, so it's not a long film, but I was kind of waiting for it to get there in the end. You know what I mean? It just kind of felt like it ran out of ideas, or ran out of anything insightful, really, I think, to add to this. I mean, we've seen, I think, an interesting companion to a film like New Order would be firstly something like Roma, Alfonso Cuarón's film from a few years ago, which has that amazing scene where, which is kind of based on, you know, real protests which were happening at the time when Cuarón was kind of living in Mexico City and experiencing this firsthand. But you have a kind of snapshot of that, and it's sort of it almost suddenly just interrupts the film you're watching in a really visceral way. And I think he achieves something in like one or two scenes there in terms of the way that these kind of events unfold, and the way that they often quite kind of, yeah, violently and dramatically kind of interrupt real life is he touches on something I think really interesting there. And actually something like Baccarat as well, from I think 2 years ago now, which I think is just a really, just on a satirical level, works much better, and it's just more interesting and far more entertaining than this.
I'd also throw in the mix La Llorona, the horror film as well from last year, which sort of deals with similar themes, although I think what unites some of these films we just mentioned is that the perspective is different. This is very much focused. You start in the gated community with the upper class, multi-millionaire white Mexicans, and then you see that incursion happened on their household and their home, and maybe you're in their shoes. Lou, what would you make of this? You were nodding while Adam was talking.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in agreement for the most part, in that the way he kind of mounts, I mean, I know this is not really the point of the film, but the way he mounts the actual action and sets things up, you know, the way the wedding is suddenly crashed, like that scene and the way that's built up, I thought it's done really, really well. And when the daughter takes the former employee and goes to, you know, goes to sort his medical situation out or whatever, you know, they're sort of driving off in a car, and the sequences in the car when they come up against the riots and all that sort of stuff, that kind of, the way that's done, the movement and the way we're sort of immersed into that journey around the city reminded me a little bit of even stuff like Children of Men, you know? It reminded me like that you're sort of right in there, you're right in the middle of it. And that I thought was really thrilling and really interesting. Specifically what Adam was saying, what I was in agreement was with the way that it does give you this kind of exciting action, but then where does it kind of go after that? And there's these executions and so on. Where does it go? And it doesn't really, and you know, it's 86 minutes. It kind of feels like it runs out of steam a bit for me. And you obviously, like, this guy is obviously a talented director. But the other thing, I mean, and this is perhaps the other thing, he's sort of apologised for the way some people have read it. And he's, like, so politically, on the surface of this film, it's the poor finally rebelling against the rich. That's the overall thing. The poor finally rebelling against the rich and overtaking and executing all the rich. But the way they do it is in a really fascist way that obviously the South American juntas of the 70s and 80s and whatever, we know that this stuff went on in South America, certain South American countries. We know that it did, right? And it's like to suddenly sort of portray this as in this particular fashion. I don't get me wrong. I don't think Franco's saying, necessarily saying this is what we should do. We should execute everyone. We should be really fascist and really heavy-handed about it. But if he's not saying that, what is he really saying? And I'm not sure what he's actually saying.
Yeah, I think I've seen this compared to two films from the last year or two. So it had comparisons with Parasite, because Parasite also has this great class consciousness and turns violent towards the end, with literally the servants coming out of the basement and disrupting a party. But also Joker, which also won a big prize at Venice very recently. Mm. And I suppose people are using positive negative there. Positively for Parasite, negatively for Joker. Maybe it's a lot of empty provocations that in the end satisfies or a sort of white fears over anyone else's, because unlike Parasite, I don't really feel there's much of a satirical edge to the depictions of the upper class. And when those first scenes of uprising, of the home invasion happened, the sort of looks of glee on the face of the former servants as they sort of whip off their work clothes and start looting, it's very pointed. And I don't think that Michel Franco really has a point. There are sort of other twists and turns of cynicism as he goes on. So it is probably a little bit more like Joker in the sense it is maybe empty political provocation by the end. But I agree with you both. I think the opening scenes, I've always been fascinated by the idea of great violent acts happening just out of earshot. Probably all the way back to me being a kid and waking up one Saturday morning and hearing there'd been a bomb in Manchester city centre. And I'm like, wait a second, but there are birds flying outside. It's all mm-hmm. peaceful here. Or likewise, living in London and hearing of all things happening literally down the road and actually where you are, it's fine. And it's something quite chilling about knowing that things can happen so close. And the way that they're having this party with, some techno remix of the Wedding March playing and they're all dancing around and then someone steps out for a cigarette and you hear helicopters flying and explosions down the street. There's something quite well controlled there, but I don't think it really pays off in the end. But let's put some scores on this. Adam, you first.
Yeah, I quite liked Chronic, which was the last of Franco's films I saw, so I'd go in with a 3 for anticipation. I think enjoyment's a maybe not the right word. Maybe a 2. I'm so torn between a 2 and a 3 because I think technically it is a very accomplished film. I think in terms of actually what I got out of it, it would be a 2. But I think I can appreciate on a kind of craft level what he's doing here. I would say maybe a 2 in retrospect. The Joker comparison I think is maybe a little bit overstated, but I don't say this lightly, but I would probably rather rewatch Joker than this.
Okay, that's strong words, Adam. Lou?
Well, Joker or not, it's certainly no Parasite, let's face it, anticipation, I almost feel like I shouldn't really give a mark because I should whisper it, but I hadn't seen any Franco films before this. I was obviously aware of his work and blah, 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 but I'd not seen any. So I feel like it's unfair. I mean, I should probably give it 2.5 as a midpoint. I know I'm not allowed to, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, maybe we say 2 because I was kind of like, well, okay. Enjoyment. Go on, I'll go as high as 3 for enjoyment. Go on, twist me on. And in retrospect, yeah, probably only a 2, actually, in retrospect, because, I've watched it twice now. I probably won't watch it a third time in my life, I'll be honest with you. Because someone would say, should we put this on? And I'll be like, nah, Parasite we've got, Joker we've got,
I'd give this 3-2-2. I'd seen Michel Franco's previous film, April's Daughter, at Cannes a few years ago, and that's a wild, very provocative melodrama that I know turned some people off, but I quite dug. This didn't really come together for me. And some of the films we mentioned earlier on, like Baccarat, La Llorona, I'd recommend checking those out instead. But also, one great thing about a film like this that's so provocative, there's such great writing about it out there. Mm-hmm. And if listeners want to go and see a film that maybe will, see a film, go and have something sweet afterwards, have a long chat, this is the sort of film that will provoke that conversation.
Can I just very quickly add as well that he has already shot his next film and it's going to be in competition in Venice this year. So it's life comes at you fast when you're Michel Franco. But yes, it sounds pretty good, actually. It's Tim Roth holidaying in Acapulco. As a kind of, I think it's another sort of wealthy, sounds like quite a cynical satire on sort of wealth. But yeah, that we'll be reporting on that. Look out for our sort of first take of that in about a month's time.
Yeah, very much looking forward to that. Listeners, let us know what you make of this or Free Guy if you see them at the cinemas this weekend. Usual channels at LW Lies or Truth and Movies at tcolondon.com. Up next, back to Ryan Reynolds, all the way back to the early 2000s for Van Wilder Party Liaison. So listeners, some of you may not have even been born when this film came out, so a bit of synopsis recap. In this bawdy college romp, Van Wilder is a college stud who is in no rush to graduate. But after 6 years of partying, his parents have stopped paying his fees, so he comes up with raunchy money-making schemes to stay on campus. Then he falls for Gwen, but the question remains, can he turn over a new leaf and start to grow up? Oh, big questions to start. First of all, guys, this we don't often talk about how we get hold of the films that we talk about in Film Club, but I think we all should shout out CEX. Of course, other secondhand shops are available. Van Wilder is not one that is currently streaming on Mubi or BFI Player or your August streaming service of choice, but it is in the £1 bin section of your local CEX. And I think we had a nice little tour of South England's CEXs, didn't we, to get this? I picked mine up in Brighton. Lou, where did you get yours?
I rocked over to Bayswater, just you know, a bit of sort of fringes of where Central London hits West London, isn't it?
Yeah. And Adam,
sort of Islington was the closest that had it in stock. It's funny actually, I've not been into one of those shops in so long, and I sort of very tempted to pick up more things from the kind of £1 section. Amazing what stuff you can get in there. I mean, I'm sort of, in terms of, like, we've spoken about this before, Michael, but aside from vinyl, I'm not really like a physical media guy for films and stuff. But yeah, it was kind of hard to resist picking up a few extra things in
it,
there.
It can quickly become a habit because there are all sorts of ways of gamifying your trip to CEX if you wanted to sell off some of your own DVDs and then just with the voucher, go in and don't spend any money. The £1 section. I love going to the really big ones that you sometimes get in city centres. So the Birmingham city centre one is huge. And the £1 section is like an entire wall. And you can see like what DVDs were so popular that people bought them, but not so popular that people kept them. And what, so Inception or something. Yeah. There's like two entire racks of just Inception. But also it's really good. You kind of can go travel back through time and realize that a lot of what was put out on DVD didn't come out on Blu-ray or came out on Blu-ray in a different way. You can buy those big, like, Cary Grant, Buster Keaton, Betty Davis box sets, which have like 12 to 15 films crammed in for, £10 there. It's really good.
I mean, let's face it, undoubtedly there are some people who are a bit sniffy about this kind of thing, but the truth of the matter is, what's the biggest issue with cinema and film? It's accessibility, right? And it's what you can get, and some people haven't got a tenner for Netflix or tenner for Mubi or whatever. So if you can nip into sex, spend a couple of quid and get a couple of films, it's ideal, right?
Yeah, and that's exactly what we did this week with Van Wilder. I only bought one copy, I didn't buy a couple of copies though, Lou. So where did we watch this film at the time, Lou? Were you a fan already?
I don't think I saw it at the cinema, but I saw it relatively soon after. It might have been probably before it was on telly. I probably saw it, and people were like, because when I was, in sort of 23, 24, whatever it was, I definitely would have had friends who would have been like, yeah, this is the funniest thing since blah, blah, blah. And actually, I remember there is a guy called Dave that I knew from years ago. I used to work with him B&Q back in the day. And I'm sure I would have had a chat with him and he would have been like, yeah, that's well funny. And I would have been like, yeah, that's wicked. Now, I mean, let's face it. The highlight of the film is a massive, massive load of dog jizz. Now, the listeners are probably thinking, Lou, are you sure, mate? But the truth of the matter is there is a really stomach-churning sequence where Van Wilder and his pal, who's played by Cal Penn, who is terrific. I love him. He's in Harold and Kumar. He's in some other good stuff. But anyway, he and Van Wilder, they basically masturbate Van Wilder's dog. And they basically fill these eclairs with this dog jizz. And it's both completely disgusting, but also hilarious and brilliant. And it's like, you know, I really did feel like shouting cinema when I was watching it.
My stomach is turning with that description of it.
Just on that note, can I give a shout out to Roger Ebert's original review of the film? The opening lines of which read as follows. Watching Van Wilder, I grew nostalgic for the lost innocence of a movie like American Pie, in which human semen found itself in a pie. In Van Wilder, dog semen is baked into pastry. Is it only a matter of time until the heroes of teenage gross-up comedies are injecting turtle semen directly through their stomach walls? Which I think is like a perfect opening line to a review. And sadly, Ebert's prophecy so far I don't think has ever come to fruition. But, you know, it's a good marker of kind of where we were at in the sort of early noughties, turn of the century.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's interesting that this came out only, I think, three or four years after American Pie, but it already, I think at the time, already felt like, wow, this is getting quite dated and quite old quite quickly.
Mm.
It's an interesting thing, I think, around, I'm kind of thinking about a lot of these types of films, which I was at a very impressionable age when this film came out, and, you know, it would have been the sort of stuff that probably did appeal to me at the time. But there's something interesting, I think, in this recurring motif you get in a lot of these teen gross out comedies and films of this ilk, where the central character is displaying some form of arrested development and essentially refuses to, in this case, graduate, but essentially grow up, right? And I think it taps into this interesting, you know, Y2K, Gen X existential fear, I think, about like growing up and facing the real world. And I think there is some like interesting broader kind of cultural criticism to be kind of written around these films. But yeah, I mean, you know, what do you say about this now? I think aside from the fact it's racist, misogynistic, ableist, ageist, you know, there's like casual bestiality, you know, it's kind of fine.
exactly. It is completely ridiculous and it is like completely unacceptable, really. Like Adam said, it is. But the thing is, do you go down that line and say it's this, it's blah 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 blah? I mean, yeah, we could, right? And but is it not also completely harmless at the same time?
I mean, it's completely harmless because no one's watching this film nowadays. It's very much been left in 2003.
I don't know about it being harmless. I think it's just the fact that this is reflective of an era in which films were kind of made by white men for white men.
Sure.
And so, you know, from that point of view, it's not necessarily harmless if that kind of represents you. But I think, yeah, it's an interesting kind of time capsule, I think, of like where very main. I mean, you could not make a kind of mainstream comedy like this now. You wouldn't want to, exactly.
No.
It wouldn't pass the first kind of script phase. That being said, I think it was really interesting going back and seeing Ryan Reynolds' real kind of first breakout moment. I mean, he'd been in a handful of films before this, but I think this is kind of seen generally as like his first starring role. And he is basically playing the same character as he plays in sort of Free Guy. I mean, just in the fact that, yes, it's a different setup and a different setting, and he is, you know, personality-wise playing a different kind of character, but he's still very benign. He's essentially like a nice guy. He's not like nasty or mean-spirited. I mean, he's almost, you could say, a little bit philanthropic in this, in his pursuits, which is sort of quite an interesting thing.
He's quite kind, isn't he? That's the thing. He is like fundamentally. I mean, you're right to obviously highlight the fact that they're very much a product of its time, no question. There were loads of things like this being made around the time, and yeah, obviously even by the standards of 2002 and 2003, yeah, it is, yeah, homophobic, racist, blah, blah, blah. You know, if you want to take it to that, it depends how seriously you take these things. And well, but it doesn't feel malicious. I know that's like a weird, I'm not trying to apologise for any of those things, obviously not, right? But he is a kind person, and he is like Adam said, he is like fundamentally a nice guy, and he's trying to help out his mates, and that is what he's about.
I think that's what gets to the central appeal of Ryan Reynolds as a performer. So he's coming out of this wave of teen movies where you they're even the nice guys, there was this sort of very of its era toxic masculinity mm-hmm. behind them, of their expectations mm. of the way they looked at women, etc. Whereas Ryan Reynolds does have that softness and endearing element to him that maybe took him a decade to really turn into his on-screen persona with something like Deadpool, where even if he's doing the most, you know, wise cracking sarcastic stuff on screen, there's still something quite warm there. And that sort of gets to something that's strange about Van Wilder. It has some pushing the envelope almost as far as it will go in terms of the gross out humor and the unpolitically correct, politically incorrect aspects. But it is also at heart, first of all, the star vehicle, which most of the teen movies of the era aren't. They're mostly ensembles. If you think of American Pie, Road Trip, there's not like a breakout single star. And it's also a bit more of an 80s throwback. It's really interested in being like a mix of definitely Animal House. It's got the National Lampoon's stamp on it. But stuff like Breakfast Club and Ferris Bueller. You have the teacher from Breakfast Club is the teacher in this. And you've got Tim Matheson, who's from Animal House, as Van Wilder's dad. And his performance and his character, Van Wilder, almost operates a bit more like an 80s comedy star, like a Belushi or a Bill Murray or mm-hmm. a Chevy Chase or even like, you know, Rodney Dangerfield in Back to School, because he's almost just walking through this film as a personality, almost making fun of it as he's in it.
We should say as well that he Van Wilder himself is not demonstrably racist or homophobic or any of these things. And actually, I think the film is very self-consciously pushing boundaries of bad taste, and it is very deliberately, politically incorrect. I think it's just that we've kind of reached a point where, you know, it's obviously this film came out kind of pre-social media. I imagine the focus groups would have all been kind of white teenage men. It's a film which I think there was less scrutiny around that stuff at the time, quite honestly. But yeah, Ryan Reynolds, I mean, if you kind of look at Deadpool as like the apotheosis of the Reynolds brand, I think it's really interesting just how early on he kind of establishes this. I mean, yes, he goes on to make kind of things like he was in one of the Blade sequels and Smoking Aces, and he kind of does his like Hollywood action hero phase. But essentially, he comes back around to doing Van Wilder-esque characters. Certainly within the last decade, that's now pretty much, I'd say, his sort of go-to mode. Deadpool is obviously a bit more like an extreme, at the extreme end of the of that spectrum. But, you know, if you look at kind of, I don't know, The Hitman's Bodyguard or various things that he's made, Free Guy, prime example, he is basically playing the same character. And I just think it's fascinating to look back on that now and see that trajectory.
And he has tried over the years to do other things. I mean, Blade Trinity and X-Men Origins Wolverine and Green Lantern weren't the successful ones. But when he's in films like The Proposal, with Sandra Bullock, Buried, The Voices, which is a film that I can go either way on, but I know there are Ryan Reynolds fans out there who say that his performance in that is particularly strong. He does challenge himself, but it does feel like now he's leaning more into the Ryan Reynolds personality. Do you have any standout Ryan Reynolds performances that we should go and check out?
I don't know. I mean, actually, you know what? When we were talking there, I was actually thinking about... he cameos a little bit in some of the Fast and Furious films.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah, I was just about to say, Hobbs and Shaw, I recently rewatched, and I actually really enjoyed it. I know it's only a couple of years ago, but I actually really, for me, it's the favourite of the Fast and Furious films. And in that, he's this wicked blend of, it's the fast talking, and the throwing in the jokes, and the kind of like, he's pretending he's not pretending, he genuinely feels like he's best mates, or he's buddies with The Rock, and The Rock's always just basically mugging him off. And I love that. I watched a film of purely Ryan Reynolds doing that. That's probably my favourite Ryan Reynolds performance. Although, having said that, recently, a couple of months ago, there was the Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard, or God, I can't even think of the title. That's what a convoluted title it is. But actually, like, I quite enjoyed him in that. I thought that was fun. I mean, wouldn't it be great one day to see him go genuinely serious, to see if he could do it? And you know what, I feel like there is an earnestness there if he really wanted to do it, because as we've said, he is kind of this sweet guy, isn't he, you know, within the crudeness of the jokes and the whatever, there's a sweetness to him, and there is this earnestness right there, right deep within him. So yeah, maybe future Oscar winner Ryan Reynolds, you heard it here first, right?
Well, in the next few years, he's making Deadpool 3 and a remake of Clue. So, you know, that kind of tells you where he's at, I think.
He could be interesting in something like Clue. It's a very different approach to...
I'd like to see him in the Tim Curry role, if they're kind of remaking it quite directly. I don't know. I mean, he's not a patch on Tim Curry in that kind of, you know, mode, but that would be quite good, seeing him basically with a bit of a poker face on.
Well, yeah, we'll have to reassemble the three of us when that comes out, and we can see how Ronnie Reynolds is doing at that point. Lou, Adam, thank you so much for joining me this week to talk about Free Guy, New Order, and Van Wilder, Party Liaison. Listeners, we've said a lot of stuff this week. A lot of contentious opinions have been spoken on this podcast, so let us know what you think with your own thoughts, especially about Ryan Reynolds. I think, you know, he's a well-liked actor. My take, though, is he's never been in a great film. Let me know if I'm wrong. At LW Lies on Twitter, truthandmovies at tcolondon.com. Next week, Censor, Nicolas Cage in Pig, and in Film Club, we're dusting off a video nasty, 1981's Possession. Subscribe wherever you pod. If your podcast player of choice lets you leave reviews, we'd love it if you left one for us. Thanks for listening. See you next time.